In the Senate Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs for today, May 21st, 2009, we will be taking the bills out of order slightly just to accommodate schedules, and I'm going to start today by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2676 and ask Lori to summarize the bill so we can learn about it while Representative Tomei approaches. Welcome, Representative Tomei.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2676A in gross creates the offense of unlawful disposition of a tobacco product. It designates the offense as a Class D violation. It authorizes court-ordered community service in lieu of a fine, and it specifies community service requirements. There's no revenue impact. There's minimal fiscal impact. No statement issued. Conflict says it's good to go. And you have before you, hot off the presses, a dash A2 amendment that I'm assuming the representative will perhaps speak to, that takes the substance of House Bill 2676 in gross and moves it into ORS 164.805, which is essentially the offensive littering statute. And we do not have a fiscal, obviously, because we just received it. That's it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm, for the record, Carolyn Tomei. I represent House District 41, which is Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. Thank you for allowing me to present this bill to your committee today. The reasoning behind the introduction of this bill is simple. Cigarette butts are the most common litter on Earth. In one day, 869 butts were picked up along the Oregon coastline during a solve cleanup. This litter creates a wide variety of negative impacts, including toxic chemicals leaching into our environment, fire hazards, children and animal ingestion, and huge costs for cleanup. In 1998, there were 2.1 billion pounds, I'll repeat that, 2.1 billion pounds of cigarette filters discarded worldwide. Unlike paper products, cigarette filters are not biodegradable. Nearly all cigarette filters are composed of a bundle of 12,000 plastic-like cellulose acetate fibers. It can take years, in some cases up to 15, for the fibers to decay into a plastic powder that can't be seen. As the filters degrade, their deadly toxins, including lead, arsenic, and cadmium, are released into our environment. The nicotine trapped inside 200 used filters is sufficient to kill an adult human, which is 50 to 60 milligrams. Imagine a month without rain, followed by a brief thunderstorm that washes hundreds of thousands of nicotine-laden filters, enough to kill 25 humans, into area creeks and streams. It's inevitable that these chemicals will infiltrate our rivers and ocean. Careless disposition of cigarettes also creates fire hazards. If a butt is simply dropped, it can smolder for up to 3 hours. Nationally, annual human and property costs of fires caused by careless smoking total about $6 billion. In Oregon, from 1999 to 2005, cigarettes sparked over 9,000 fires. In January 2001, a motorist driving along Interstate 8 in San Diego County flicked a cigarette butt onto the center median, sparking a fire that eventually burned more than 10,000 acres, destroyed 16 homes, and charred 64 vehicles. And there are many similar stories out there mirroring this very story. Cigarette butts littering the ground are not just ugly, they present a real threat to wildlife. Fish, bird, whales, and other marine creatures mistake the butts for food. Plastic pieces and residue are then found in their stomachs, along with high exposure to the toxic chemicals contained in cigarette butts. As an aside, my son lives in Depot Bay, was a salmon fisherman, and he talked about cutting open the fish and finding cigarette butts inside the fish themselves. Within just 1 hour of contact with water, the chemicals begin to leach into the aquatic environment, and they threaten the well-being of marine life. Additionally, the CDC studied 146 children aged 6 months to 2 years who ingested cigarettes or cigarette butts. Those of us who've had children or grandchildren, we know how children are likely to pick things up, especially when they're in a park or on the beach, and they're likely to put them in their mouths. The most common symptom reported was vomiting. Moreover, with 3.2 million butts being picked up in 2008 at beaches and waterways, it would be fairly easy for children at the beach or park to pick up the butts and ingest them. Finally, cleaning up cigarette butt litter carries an enormous cost. In the state of Virginia, they have a conservative estimate that it's at least $30,000 a year spent by their department to pick up cigarette butts. House Bill 2676 will not only raise awareness on this increasing problem, but will actually make it a misdemeanor punishable by a maximum fine of $90. There is also an option to perform community service in lieu of the fine that would be specifically focused on picking up this type of litter. Colleagues, we don't need to have a cigarette tobacco litter problem in Oregon. If we put into law that it is not acceptable to litter our beautiful state with butts, then public behaviors will change. Oregonians will get the word. If you smoke, you're responsible for your own cigarette butt. I'd like to thank the committee for hearing this bill and also urge the committee to move this bill forward to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. And you have before you the A2 amendments, which I just saw as I walked into the committee room. They look acceptable to me. I think it makes a good bill, a better bill, and I would support these amendments.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. And I'll explain the A2 amendments were something that Senator Brzezinski, who chairs our Senate Judiciary Committee, pointed out to us that there is an existing statute covering offensive littering. And he thought from a prosecutor's standpoint, rather than to have a separate statute, that we could move the contents of House Bill 2676A into the existing offensive littering statute. It doesn't change the provisions, the substantive provisions of 2676A. It keeps the same, it is a violation, a Class D violation, and then there's also the court can order community service in lieu of a fine, and the community service must include clearing the property of cigarettes, cigars, and cigar filters, and be completed within 6 months. So that's an alternative to the fine for this Class D violation. So it's basically the same provisions of the bill into an existing offensive littering statute. So thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Is there a question?
Senator George
and Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Representative, very much. Only one quick question, which is on cigars. I completely understand your situation with filters, cigar filters, and cigarette filters and their lack of biodegradability. But in the vast majority of cigars are just completely biodegradable. I was wondering why you chose to include that in this particular bill.
Chair Bonamici, Senator George, thank you for that question. Actually, there are many ingredients inside the tobacco leaf itself that are actually they're harmful if for a child or an animal to eat that, and also they leach bad ingredients into the environment. Actually, if you look at plants, people in nurseries, etc., they're very, very careful about both cigarette and cigar butts not being anywhere around their plants because there are things, chemicals inside the leaf itself that will leach and harm the plants.
Thank you.
And I would assume that you are a cigar smoker.
So I'm not, actually.
You're not.
I just...
Senator Burdick.
Madam Chair, I just had a question on the amendment. It deletes the word crime and puts offense, but I see later on in this subsection you have a Class C misdemeanor, which I still believe qualifies as a crime, and I'm just wondering if that...
Thank you for the question, Senator Burdick. There's an existing offensive littering statute that's a Class C misdemeanor, mm-hmm. but the provisions of 2676A were a Class D violation, so we left it the same as it was in the A version of the bill and dropped that into the offensive littering section.
Well, I guess what I'm talking about is on the first page mm-hmm. of the amendment, line 5, you take out the word crime and put in offense, when you're talking about a list of things, maybe offense includes crime. I'm just not aware of that terminology.
Legislative Council did that because part is a misdemeanor and part is a violation. If you'll see on lines 13 and 14
Correct.
Of page 2.
And I did see that. I just wanted to point that out and make sure that...
Thank you. And we'll get confirmation because we can't move this today because we don't have the fiscal, but we'll get confirmation from Legislative Council that changing crime to offense makes sense in that context. And I also wanted to point out to the committee that when Senator Przanski suggested moving this into the existing statute, that he also pointed out that there's also an existing statute that deals with the lit cigarettes or other materials. So if lighted tobacco, lit cigarettes or cigars are thrown out on any public highway, forest land, private road, or railroad right away, it's a $500 fine or 6 months in jail. So there's already a stricter provision for throwing out something that's lit. So just so that's clear. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, if I may, I brought a couple of things. There are some countries that already make this an offense, and one of them is Singapore and the other is Japan that I know of, and there are probably others. And so there are things that people can carry with them. For instance, this one, it's lined in foil so that it would extinguish the cigarette. But my favorite is this one because it would fit right into a pack of cigarettes, and it also, and it has a little American flag on it, and you can open it up and put your cigarette butt in there and close it up, and it extinguishes it, and you put it back in your pack of cigarettes if you're still choosing to smoke. So I'll leave one with you.
Appreciate that. We'll have to ask whomever's going to carry this bill if they can borrow that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And next we have Deb Schauertz from Multnomah County.
You won't have to carry it.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask you, if you have written testimony, if you could please summarize that, because we have several bills today, and we will be reading the written testimony. So if you could summarize your testimony, it would be appreciated. Thank you.
That sounds good. Thank you, Chair Bonamici and committee members, for agreeing to agree on a hearing for House Bill 2676. I also want to thank Representative Tomei and the co-sponsors for introducing this legislation. In summary, in the 1980s, I was a park ranger working in our beautiful Oregon State Parks, and for 14 years, as with all...
Can you say your name for the record?
Deb Schallert, I'm sorry. For the record, Portland resident Deb Schallert. I was a park ranger working in our beautiful Oregon State Parks, and as is in the case with all state employees, park employees, my responsibility included picking up litter, the vast majority of which was thousands of cigarette butts in every park from Silver Falls, where I worked twice, to the coast to Willow Lake. I saw firsthand the pervasive litter problem caused by cigarette butts. In 1990, then, I spent a year in Japan on a state government exchange, and there I saw where smokers consistently took personal responsibility for their cigarette butts, and I thought, this is a great idea. And I also realized we really don't have to have a cigarette butt litter problem in Oregon. Of course, the time and money that I see is wasted on butt removal is not limited to state park employees. Employees of schools, highways, businesses, and local governments spend their time and money cleaning up cigarette butts, and so do thousands and thousands of volunteers throughout our beautiful state. A significant amount of time and money could be directed to other increasingly pressing needs. So ask anyone involved with these cleanups, such as Representative Tomei pointed out, the majority of litter is comprised of cigarette butts. I've been patient thinking attitudes and actions in this area would change, sort of like they have regarding picking up pet waste, but they haven't, at least not to a degree I think we as a state deserve. So I authored this legislation to show that the state can change. I believe that public behaviors can change with the new legislation, especially when Oregon is such a great state of first in protecting the environment with the bottle bill, our public beaches, our state land use laws, and especially in this year of our 150th anniversary, I think we should raise the bar again and lead by example on this issue. So again, I really thank you for your time hearing this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions for you.
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Yes, thank you.
Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2676? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2676, and I will carry this over until Tuesday, the 26th, until we...
Do you want to adopt the dash two?
I think we're going to get that question answered, just to make sure that that's addressed correctly. Tuesday, the 26th. So, close the public hearing, and we're going to next start with... At the top? I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2325A and carry House Bill 2325A over to Tuesday the 26th. Close the work session on House Bill 2325A. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2199A and ask Lori to please give us a summary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2199A engrossed authorizes the Department of Consumer and Business Services to share information with Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. It grants the department certain authority to ensure that financial institutions comply with federal regulations. It revises provisions related to fees paid to the department by financial entities and licensees. It revises some provisions related to department calculation of the discount rate. It eliminates a 30-day posting requirement for consumer finance license applications. It revises provisions related to pawnbrokers, and it repeals regulations governing savings associations. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued, and conflict says good to go.
Thank you. And I have two people signed up on this bill, and they are both signed up for the bill. David Tapman and Paul Cosgrove, please. Paul in the room? David, if you could start, and then...
Absolutely.
Paul, join you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is David Tapman, and I'm the the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, which is one of the regulatory divisions within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And Ms. Brocker, your committee administrator, basically identified the various things that this bill will address. I call it a financial services omnibus bill. It's an attempt to try and clean up a number of issues, relatively small, but nonetheless important, to take care of, that have been building over a period of time. So with that, a lot of work was done on the House side. A number of changes were made. Worked closely with our stakeholders in the banking and the credit union association, the consumer finance lenders, and we believe we've arrived at that sweet spot within the process that we've got a bill that everyone is in agreement with. As you heard, it does a number of things. I will just touch on three of the most important ones. One, we have a provision in our bank laws regarding savings associations, and I'm sure if you heard this without knowing the context, it might make you a little nervous. One, there are no savings associations currently chartered under the state chartering system. There are only three in the state of Oregon. They're all federal. Secondly, there's another provision within the ORS, Chapter 716, that provides for savings banks. That was created in conjunction with the rest of the Bank Act. It has certain consistent standards and application for regulation that we believe are much superior to 722, which is really an outdated process. So we're eliminating this duplicate charter, but still reserving the ability for an institution should it choose to come in as a savings bank. So that's one provision. Next is the provision of sharing with the U.S. Treasury Division. That's the Financial Center Enforcement Network, known as FinCEN to most of us. They receive a lot of information, and we were in a difficult position of sharing information because of the restrictions on our ability to share certain items that we observe in a bank examination or credit union examination. So because of that, we wanted to clarify that this is an important law enforcement function, but two, what our limitations would be should we share this information. So the bill now expressly defines who we could share within the U.S. Treasury Office. And then the third important piece is one that Mr. Cosgo could go talk about to some in some additional length if he gets here, is there was a request to clarify two things regarding the annual percentage rate that will be used when consumer finance companies are able to calculate the APR. As you know, last session, 2007, session, a cap was put on fees. But the cap is, reads 36% or, and then it had a rather lengthy calculus. We've been asked to simplify and clarify what the basis for that calculus is, and the bill says that it would be 36% or a calculated rate of 30% plus the amount of the discount rate. And now we've clarified that that discount rate will be based upon the 90-day commercial paper as defined at the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. Just a clarification. Again, we have the support. And then lastly, we also allow ourselves to set that prior to the new year. Many of the institutions that use this have computer-generated systems for generating their truth in lending information and materials. And if they have to wait until after the law goes into effect, then they have to amend, or they have to go in and reprogram their computers, which is time-consuming and can be expensive. This bill would allow us to set the rate at the end of the first or second week of December, which then gives them some lag time to update their computer information. So again, all fairly technical, and again, all supported by the various stakeholders that work with us on a regular basis. There are some other features in here. I'm happy to talk about them. It's in the written testimony, but in the interest of time and your busy schedule, I can stop now.
I appreciate that. Are you eliminating as many pages as you're adding?
But I wish. Unfortunately, it's a very long bill, only because there are so many sections that need conforming language. There are references throughout much of the ORS, particularly in the Bank Act, it requires conforming language, and that's why you have so many pages. But most of the changes are in the bold black print.
Yeah, thank you for all your work on this. I know there was a lot of work done on the House, so I appreciate on the House. I appreciate all the work that's gone into this bill. Any questions? No. And Mr. Cosgrove is not here, and it's my understanding that he has legislative counsel working on an amendment to this bill.
Madam Chair, I
know anything about
that. I have not seen anything. I'm not aware of it. It is our position that we are fine with the bill as it is. If you've got the fiscal information, we're prepared to have it go forward, and we understand that time is of the essence, but we'll leave that to the committee to decide how it wishes to proceed.
It's my understanding that the amendment doesn't deal with the substance of the provisions that you've discussed, but is instead designed to take certain entities out of a chapter and move them to another chapter. So I see a head nodding back there. And that it's my understanding also that that amendment may be ready on Tuesday. So what I'd like to do is see if we can get that and move this on Tuesday. Is that all right with the committee? Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2199A? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2199A. Do I need to carry that over?
Nope,
or is
it's
it on?
Already
on? It's already posted for Tuesday.
Posted.
So we'll plan to move this Tuesday.
Okay.
Did I close the hearing?
I think you did.
Okay. Next, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2614 and ask Lori to discuss this while Andrew, are you in the room, comes forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2614 was before you on the 7th of May. It requires a landlord of a dwelling located in a 100-year floodplain to notify a tenant that the dwelling is in the floodplain. It allows a tenant not receiving that notification and experiencing a subsequent uninsured flood loss to recover from the landlord lesser of actual loss or 2 months' rent. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. Conflict says good to go.
Thank you. And committee, if you recall, we had a hearing on this bill on the 7th of May, and I know there were some questions raised, and so I invited Andrew on behalf of Representative Buckley's office to come back and answer some of your questions.
Thank you, Chair Bonamici, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Ainsworth, and I'm here on behalf of Representative Buckley. The committee administrator basically said everything that I could about the bill. It's a very simple bill. There was no opposition during the committee proceedings on the House side of the building, and it passed the House pretty handily. So basically, I'm here just to answer any questions you may have about the bill. And if there are none, that's fine with me as well.
Any questions?
I guess, Madam Chair, I'm still really torn on this. I mean, because of the maps. The maps just are not accurate out there. And I apologize I didn't follow up with the representative and work on that, and I should have. But the maps are just so inaccurate, you wouldn't know whether you're in or out. And that's really the crux of the issue, I think.
Did you want to respond, Andrew?
Sure. Chair Von Meech, Senator Girard, George, sorry. Mixing those up. I understand, you know, that you may have concerns about the maps. I know that Mr. Bartholomew, who stopped by last time to testify opposition to the bill, also had concerns about the accuracy of the maps. You know, they are the best that we seem to have. You know, Mother Nature is rather unpredictable, and so no map is going to be 100% accurate. Mr. Bartholomew suggested, you know, if a property didn't flood in the 96 flood, then, you know, that should be the, you know, test of whether or not it's in the floodplain. That's not really a feasible test to apply across the state. So given the difficulty of predicting nature and its wrath, I would say that FEMA's 100-year flood floodplain maps are probably the best way to go. I realize it's not perfect, but it definitely is, you know, the best way to go.
Senator Dredd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem that I have is that almost all cities have statutes and counties, et cetera, that if you build in the floodplain, you have to build, I know the city of Staten is 2 feet above the floodplain. So the people that seem to be liable, I would tend to sort of agree a little bit with Senator George, would be FEMA itself, because if you're 2 feet above the floodplain, you shouldn't flood. So, you know, if people build in according to codes within a floodplain, I don't see a problem with that. And so the way the bill's written, I will oppose it.
Senator Bovinci, Senator Girard. The bill mainly serves as a notification to a tenant of a rental property that they are located in a floodplain. All it requires is that the landlord notify the tenant, and from that point on, the landlord is free of any responsibility should there be a flood. The tenant at that point has the choice whether or not to, you know, purchase flood insurance. If they do not, even after being notified and they suffer an uninsured loss, it's, you know, it's at their own risk at that point. In response to your comments about building codes in various cities and counties, in Ashland, for example, which Representative Buckley represents, and I lived there for a time as well, we had a rather large flood in 1997 that tore through downtown. You know, once again, it gets back to what I was mentioning earlier about the unpredictability about nature. It is hard to, you know, foresee what will happen. This bill mainly just serves to notify the tenant of any risks that may exist.
Madam Chair, follow up?
Yes.
Since they're built by code, and like again, I'll use state, and it's 2 feet above the floodplain, mm-hmm. then you'd have to, you know, that if that flood got to the point where that would damage that home, then all homes that were built that 2 feet or that are not in the floodplain but are still less than 2 feet would flood. So it just doesn't seem fair.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else here to testify about House Bill 2614? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2614 and open a work session on House Bill 2614.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2614 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2614 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? And would you please call the roll?
Ms. Bonnie?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Mom?
Aye.
Mr. George?
Nope.
Chair Bonamici? Aye. House Bill 2614 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Rosenbaum, I see your name on this bill. Will you be our carrier?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 2614. And next I'm going to... we'll skip over that one. Okay. We'll open a... Is Jana here? Or...
Jen, yeah, okay. She's here.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2910. Lori, can you please summarize 2910 for us? And Jana and Sean can come up.
Excuse me.
And or Sean.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2910A engrossed excludes sole practitioners from conducting professional real estate activity licensed by the real estate agency. It permits an individual engaged in professional real estate activity as of specified date to become a principal broker. It prohibits the agency from charging a fee for an initial license of certain sole practitioners. It allows a broker with 3 or more years' experience to temporarily supervise real estate activity of another licensee under certain circumstances. And it repeals provisions related to licensed personal assistance. There's no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. No statement issued. Conflict says good to go.
Thank you. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean. After floodplains and cigarette butts, I think this is going to be a little bit boring, but I'll try to get you guys through, Madam Chair. This is a little bit of licensing law update for real estate licensees. The Oregon Association of Realtors and the Real Estate Agency worked for about 18 months to come up with some revisions to the statute, and the House Bill 2910A is the result of that work. There's 3 primary issues that the bill addresses. First, in 2001, this legislature saw fit to make the transition to all broker licensing for real estate licensees, which means primarily that we have principal brokers and brokers. Those are our 2 categories of licensees. However, at that point in time, we left this kind of quasi-designation, which is the sole practitioner, those people operating independently, and they typically have a broker's license, but they're operating independently. This would merely remove that designation. It would not remove the ability for people to operate independently. They would just become principal brokers in the future. The important thing to note on that is it does grandfather in all current sole practitioners to principal broker status. So those folks who are sole practitioners on December 31st, 2009, become principal brokers. We also put a provision in the bill that they are not charged. The fee is waived for that transition over. So there's no charge to those folks who are currently sole practitioners to become principal brokers. Prospectively going forward, those brokers who wish to operate independently would have to become a principal broker. The second thing that the bill does is it addresses an issue that's concerns our more rural members, where you might have a small office and there's a single principal broker supervising 2-3 brokers in an office. And the issue that arises is the principal broker is supervising that professional real estate activity and they become ill, or they go on vacation and there's no one there to supervise the activity of the brokers. So what the bill goes in and does is it gives the real estate agency rulemaking authority to say that principal broker can designate one of his brokers who has 3 years of active experience to supervise the activity of the office. That way we have all professional real estate activity being supervised during these temporary absences. The bill also says that that supervision cannot last longer than 90 days. So it truly is for temporary circumstances, unforeseen circumstances, vacations, so on. The final thing that the bill does is a little bit of cleanup, and we added it over on the House side. It repeals a statute referring to licensed personal assistance. It's caused some confusion in the real estate industry of how you exactly obtain a licensed personal assistant license. There is no such thing. It's a real estate licensee who's acting as an assistant. And so rather than have that confusing statute in there, we've repealed it. Those individuals are still subject to all the other statutes regarding real estate licensees. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you so much. Sean, any questions? You're off the hook. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2910 and open a work session on House Bill 2910.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2910 A engross the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2910 A engross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Lonnie, will you please call the roll?
Senator Wittig?
Aye.
Senator Gerard?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Von Mucci?
Aye. House Bill 2910, A engrossed, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Gerard, would you carry this, please?
Oh, man. Okay.
He said enthusiastically. Senator Gerard will be our carrier. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2910 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2673A and ask Hannah Montana to come for. Representative Gelser to please come and testify on while Lori gives us a summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2673A in gross prohibits the use of computer software designed to circumvent equitable distribution of admission tickets for entertainment events. It makes use of that software an unlawful trade practice. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and conflict says good to go.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sarah Gelser, representative from Corvallis and Philomath. It occurs to me that this morning at 8 o'clock I had the opportunity to testify in front of both Senator Bonamici and Senator Girard's committees, even though they don't serve on the same 8 o'clock committee, so it's nice to end my day with both of you as I started my day with both of you, and I'm pleased that this is a much happier topic than what I was speaking to you both about this morning. This is a great bill that you can feel good about when you go home, especially if you know a little girl. A couple of years ago, Hannah Montana came to Oregon. She was on a national tour. Hannah Montana is actually Miley Cyrus, the daughter of Billy Ray Cyrus, and she is a teen singing sensation beloved by girls primarily between the ages of 8 and 11. These girls were so excited to see this young woman in concert, but their parents, when they went to go buy their tickets on Ticketmaster, found that 1 minute after they opened for sale, they were all gone, and they were redirected to third-party ticket sites. This happened all across the United States, where these ticket prices to see Hannah Montana were automatically marked up to prices starting at around $2,500 per ticket. This resulted in devastated little girls pretty much everywhere. It was a debacle for the artist who didn't get any of these dollars, and very frustrating for the venues as well. What happened later is that it creates a false sense of demand, because these little robots that get into your software and buy things up. They circumvent the firewalls that are within Ticketmaster or other online distributors to be able to just buy mass quantities of these. It's basically online ticket scalping. So what we propose to do in this bill is make that an unlawful trade practice in the state of Oregon. And while Hannah Montana got a lot of attention because of little girls who kind of graced news programs all across the United States, this also happens when it's an artist like Van Halen or Bon Jovi or other artists that I've never had the opportunity to see. And I'm not
maybe
sure
dating yourself.
I may be. And it also happens with sports events and athletic events as well. There is no opposition to this bill that we are aware of at this point. There really is no one that likes the bots. Ticketmaster has spent millions of dollars trying to fight this software, and attorneys general in other states have also filed lawsuits against organizations that use these software bots. The bill passed unanimously in the House. It's a great bill. I hope that you will forward it to the Senate, and you can go tell your nieces, daughters, and granddaughters that you did something to make them happy.
Thank you, Representative. Does Representative Bruin, I see as a co-sponsor, did his daughter actually get to see Hannah Montana?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, his daughters did get to see Hannah Montana. My daughters did not get to see Hannah Montana. Representative Matthews' daughters did get to see Hannah Montana on the Consumer Protection Committee on the other side. I think what we've learned from this is I'm not nearly as nice as they are.
Questions from Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, thank you. So when you get on a ticket website and they ask you to type in a word that's against a field, that doesn't prevent this from happening?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, this circumvents that. They have these programs that get around that. That word is there to try to prevent this type of robotic scalping from happening.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? We have a letter that came in from Representative Bruin as well. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Seeing no questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2673A and open a work session on House Bill 2673A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2673A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2673A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can you call the roll, please, Bonnie?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Bonamici?
Aye. House Bill 2673A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a volunteer? Chair will carry the bill.
I
think that's appropriate because as I poll the committee, you have the youngest child.
close the work session on House Bill 2673A, and I don't know, my youngest child is off to college, so I don't know what that statement is. I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2199A briefly so Mr. Cosgrove can come up and clarify. I was trying to speak for you, Paul, and I hesitate to do that on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First of all, I apologize. I was with a physician in a member's office, not on a medical call, but I'm sorry I couldn't get out. You know how physicians are. They're worse than lawyers. They talk a lot. So I greatly appreciate it. Dixie Hannon accurately relayed your comments about the bill. I think you described it extraordinarily well, not having seen the amendments yet. The amendments are something we've been discussing with the department for some time. And it moves the sections of the law having to do with payday and title lending from Chapter 725, which also deals with consumer finance lending, my clients, into a different chapter. It will change no licensing requirements, no regulatory requirements, no penalties, and no consumer protections, but it separates those two. And the rationale for it is they're really very different models of business, and they've sort of by historical fluke got put in the same chapter, and we're separating them so that we can actually take a look during the interim about whether we need to modernize and update the language with both sections. So the bill itself will just, or excuse me, the amendment itself will just make the separation without any substantive change.
And you also support the existing provisions of House Bill 2199A?
Yes. Clarify. Yes. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay, I'm going to close.
And thank you very much.
Reclose the public hearing, and just to be safe, make sure that everyone knows that that is it. Repost. It's posted
it's,
again.
It's already posted. Posted again. 26 minutes. Sure.
We doing something next? Sure. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2962A and ask Lori to summarize the bill while John Van Landingham comes forward to explain.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2962A and Gross provides that a live-in employee or an employee's dependents may only be evicted after 24 hours written notice of employment termination unless a longer period is specified in an employment contract. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. Conflict said good to go on the bill as introduced and with the amendment. However, I don't believe have a fiscal as of yet on the A2. There is an A2 amendment that revises some of the provisions related to unlawful holding and makes some other technical changes.
Thank you. John?
Madam Chair, John Van Landingham, Lane County Legal Aid. This is a constituent bill for Senator Prozansky. It's a small issue, but it's important for a friend of his and some people around the state. I got involved because the first draft did it wrong and put it into the Landlord-Tenant Act where it should not be. And I'm a little possessive about the Landlord-Tenant Act. So it's a gut and stuff of a House bill. That's why Senator Prozansky's bill ended up starting in the House. It passed the House 59-1. The issue involved is a caregiver who employs, a homeowner or a person who occupies a dwelling unit and employs a caregiver, terminates the employment of the caregiver, and the caregiver doesn't leave voluntarily. The caregiver, that's not a landlord-tenant relationship. It's an employer-employee relationship. It's not covered by the Landlord-Tenant Act. If the caregiver does not leave voluntarily, the employer's only choices are to physically remove the caregiver, which in the case that employers are often disabled or elderly is not likely and also risky to do, or file a regular lawsuit called injectment, which takes months. They're not able under current law to use the FED process that landlords are able to use to quickly remove tenants who fail to leave voluntarily. The bill simply allows the employer in this situation to use an FED to remove the caregiver who refuses to leave voluntarily. The amendments simply correct drafting errors that were made in the rush on the House side. We didn't have time to fix it there on the House side. There's nothing significant about the amendments.
Thank you. And we did have a hearing, I don't remember when it was, but earlier in the session on Senator Prozansky's bill. So I thought this sounded familiar. So thank you for clarifying that for me. Any questions of John before he gets away? No? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2962A and open a work session on House Bill 2962A.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated May 19th, 2009 to House Bill 2962A engrossed.
Senator George moves to adopt the Dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2962A engrossed, dated 5/19/09. Is there any discussion? Any objection? And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2962 while we wait for the fiscal, and I'm going to carry over House Bill 2962A to Tuesday the 26th and close the work session on House Bill 2962A. Next, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2188A and ask Lori to summarize the bill. We had a public hearing on this earlier, and we do have three amendments, so I don't know who is here. Is it David Tapman who's here to, and Lou, to explain the amendments? And
I can run through them.
2188. Lori, if you want to summarize those just briefly, and then we'll have Lou. And then is Jim coming up with you? You guys want to flip a coin or somebody needs to come up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2188A engrossed was before you on the 7th of May. It deals with some mortgage lending provisions and prohibitions and requirements. There are three new amendments. The Dash 2s delete the attorney fees provisions. The Dash 3s clarify the application of the provisions relating to solicitation in language other than English. And the Dash 4s revise the provisions relating to ascertaining a borrower's ability to pay. There's no revenue impact. There are fiscal statements that legislative fiscal issued very quickly for us on the Dash 2s, the Dash 3s, and the Dash 4s. There also was a subsequent referral, by prior reference. However, the Senate President's Office has indicated that the committee could recommend that they rescind that subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
And thank you. It does look like the workload impact of this bill is included in the DCBS budget. Welcome. Do you want to go ahead and ask you to come up to explain the amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I think Mr. Marquis wanted me up here for a photo op.
Actually. Right.
Once the session, we were at the same table testifying about a bill. This bill went through the House, and we sat down with the industry and worked on a couple of three amendments, and we believe it's ready to go. As the committee administrator pointed out, the attorney fee provision in the original bill has been removed. That's the A2 and the A3 relate to the language provision of the bill, which basically links the two sections together so that, for example, the advertisement and solicitation would be made in Spanish and the negotiation would be made in Spanish. That was a clarification. And then the A4s really just clarify who does the verification of income and who really does evaluate the ability to repay.
Thank you for the explanation.
And Madam Chair, Jim Marquis on behalf of Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association. Lou and I have kidded each other for a long time that if we worked together long enough, we were going to find something we agreed on. We might have found it in this bill. I just want to say I do appreciate the fact that the department has been willing to work on amending this bill. With the adoption of the three amendments that Lou has outlined, we are okay with the bill. And would not oppose it any longer. We have opposed it, as most of you know, before. I do want to say that with the I find the Dash 4s particularly important because the original bill and the engrossed bill had a requirement that a person licensed under Chapter 59, that is a mortgage broker or a mortgage banker, would be required to not only verify income and assets in a negative amortization loan, but actually do an evaluation which would equate to an underwriting of the loan. And mortgage brokers simply don't do that. The lenders do. And so what the amendment accomplishes is that the mortgage broker would not be doing the evaluation, but it would be back with the lender where we think it belongs. And so with that, we're just fine with the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we are in work session, so I will entertain a motion on the Dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2188 and Gross, stated 5709.
Senator Rosenbaum moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2188A and Gross, dated 5709. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments, dated 5-20-2009, Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2188A, dated 5-20-2009.
Senator Rosenbaum moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 5-20-09 to House Bill 2188A. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the Dash 3 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2188A dated 5-20-2009.
Senator Rosenbaum moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 5-20-09 to House Bill 2188A. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 4 amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2188A engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Senator Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2188A engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommends that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
Are those two separate motions or can you lump them together?
Yeah. I've always heard them lumped. Would you like me to do them separately?
I thought it took a unanimous vote to waive the Ways and Means referral. It does not take a unanimous vote to go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We're not waiving it. We're recommending that the subsequent referral be removed. So it's a recommendation that the Senate president...
It's up to them.
That's still a violation of Senate rules.
We've done that in the committee on which Senator George and I serve pretty frequently.
I don't think that's right by rules.
Would you like
recommend
does anybody know the accurate answer to it? And if they want to sit on it, then they can. But the rules state that if to waive it, at least my understanding. To waive it, it took a unanimous vote, and not to waive, and you know, the recommendation to go to the floor is not, because you're not going to have majority. You're not going to have my vote on this bill.
But we're not waiving, Ways and Means referral.
I know,
we're making a recommendation to the Senate President that he rescind it, and it's the Senate President's decision where the bill goes.
Well, we have the
Senate
the
President
combined
could
motion
do it without the recommendation.
We have the combined motion pending.
Yeah,
would you like us to do them separately?
Yes, I would like them separately.
Okay.
If I can restate my motion,
okay.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Rosenbaum can restate
I'll move
motion.
House Bill 2188 engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2188 engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can you please call the roll?
Senator Britt?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator
Rosenthal? Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair
Aye. House Bill 2188 Gross moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And
Madam Chair, I move that we recommend that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on House Bill 2188 Gross be rescinded.
Senator Rosenbaum moves that we recommend that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means on House Bill 2188A as amended be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Honey, will you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair Bonamici?
Aye.
The motion carries. And I also wanted to note that we have a letter in support of House Bill 2188 from the AARP, and I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2188A, and the chair will carry the bill. Next, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2255A and ask Lori to summarize the bill. And John?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2255 was before you on the 14th of May, and at that time you adopted the Dash 4 amendments. In brief summary, this prohibits manufactured dwelling park nonprofit cooperatives from issuing stock in the cooperative. It specifies certain rights and notification requirements and certain title transfer requirements. It creates some new provisions for lien holders regarding notices and right to sell and store manufactured homes. It defines the borrowers for certain tax credits. It mandates membership for resident owner if the dwelling park originated as a nonprofit cooperative. The Dash 4s that you adopted includes the lien perfected with the Department of Consumer and Business Services in the lien holder definition, and it amended the measure to resolve conflicts.
Right, and we did adopt the amendment. We were waiting for the fiscal, and I called John up to see if anyone has any questions. Any questions? No? Did I open a work session, right?
I think you did, yeah.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2255 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves House Bill 2255A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We do have a no expenditure and no impact on the Dash 4s. Will you please call the roll, Connie?
Senator Riddick?
Aye.
Senator
Rod?
No. Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Mr. George?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2255A, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Burdick, would you please help me?
Happy to, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2255A and open a work session on House Bill 2377A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2377A engrossed was before you on the 14th of May. It requires the use of a hands-free accessory to use a mobile communications device while operating a motor vehicle. It expands the list of exceptions to include public safety and emergency personnel, persons using the device in the scope of employment, and persons using the device allowing for one-way voice communication. It designates the offense as a Class D traffic violation, punishable by a maximum fine of $90. You had already adopted on the 14th the Dash 12 amendments, which create another exception for persons with Federal Communications Commission licenses operating amateur radios, and also creates an exception for two-way radio device operators. There's no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. Conflict says good to go.
Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move.
Senator
George, I didn't mean to step on your line.
I've been disowned by several members of my family.
So that would be me? Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2377A engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2377A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As amended, right.
As amended
with the Dash 12s. Any discussion? Bonnie, will you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Ross?
Nope.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Aye. House Bill 2377A, as amended, goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And Senator Burdick, you get two in a row. carry this. Senator Burdick will be our carrier. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2377A and open work session on House Bill 2371A. This is the bill that we heard previously. I don't technically need to carry it over. It is scheduled for a work session on Tuesday the 26th, but I wanted to let everyone know about that. There has been some progress made in the negotiations on an amendment. So we'll see that on Tuesday, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2371A. Is there anything left undone, Lori?
I think you've done quite a lot, Madam Chair.
Yeah. We are adjourned.
Very much.